You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into this edition of ESPN FC, day six of the European Championships, done and dusted. Here to break it down, Steve Nichol, Don Hutchison, Casey Keller, and myself, Sebastian Salazar. We're also going to hear from Sidlo and Julian Laurent on the biggest non-Euro news of the day, and that is that Sergio Ramos will be leaving, guys, Real Madrid after 16 years at the club. We'll hear from Gab Marcotti as well. But let's start in Italy. Italy against Switzerland in Group A in Rome. And Italy, another impressive result. They win 3-0, a brace from Manuel Locatelli. That made it 2-0, then a late goal from Ciro Immobile. Italy then the first team to advance to the next round in this competition. Stevie, Italy just continues to push on and impress.
Absolutely. I just hope that they're not impressing too early. But you certainly can't fault the way they've gone about it. Whenever they win the ball back, they are so dynamic. They get so many players forward. The movement is fantastic. You've got runners everywhere. So if you're actually the man on with the ball, you've got so many options. It's terrifying. It's even more terrifying if you're the opposition, because how do you stop them? Three goals twice in the trot. That tells you how good they are when they get the ball. And they're smart enough that they get the breaks. When they don't, they just keep the ball in front of them. And then as soon as they get it back, bang, they're at you real quick.
Stevie talked about energy and players that run. I mean, the one player who's probably going under the radar at the moment for Italy is Spinazzola at left back. I think he's an unbelievable player. He sets the tone, really. You've got a midfield that can do everything. You've got, you know, people like Barella that can try and get forward. You've got Jorginho that'll dictate the tempo. You've got Locatelli. Cristante then came off the bench, goal-scoring midfield players. Immobile's banging form as well. Very solid. I think that's 10 clean sheets on the spin, I think, for Italy. So at the moment, you're looking at this side and you're thinking, wow, this is some side. And they've started incredibly well.
Casey, but six goals in the first couple games.
Wow. I mean, you're not used to seeing that, right? I mean, we're all used to seeing, you know, at this stage, maybe Italy with 2 points, a 1-1 and a 0-0, and then get a result in the third game to squeak into the knockout phases. This is impressive. And this is fun to watch. I mean, when's the last time you said you wanted to sit down and not just take pride in the way Italy defends, but take pride in the way they attack and create chances? And not only, look, they've had six goals, but they very easily could have had nine or ten.
Bench is strong. I was plotting my way through when you're trying to pick what Italy's best 11 is. And I had Chiesa on the right-hand side, but Berardi started really well.
The greatest thing about them is they are a team. Yeah. You know, you look at the team sheet, and there's not a superstar in that team. And maybe because of that, they work for each other. I mean, there was one stage in the first half when Insigne, who you would expect to be a guy who would think, well, listen, I'm a forward, I'm going to stay up here. I'll tell you what, he got himself back in. He sprinted back into position to get behind the ball. Now, when you've got your goal scorers doing that, my goodness, you've got a real unit. And they're a real team.
You don't think Balotelli would have done that?
Oh, yes, Balotelli would have. He would have had to call a cab to get him back in.
But one thing, I love the team spirit. You almost must be afraid to score, because in the celebration, you're just getting pounded on
by everybody else.
I mean, it's fun to watch.
You mentioned how fun they are to watch. Probably no one enjoyed it more than Gab Marcotti. Let's bring him in then now on ESPN FC. Gab, just how good were this Italian team today?
They looked really good. I mean, I think they picked up where they left off against Turkey. I completely agree with what the boy said, especially the point Stevie made about the team spirit. And you could say, all right, it's okay to all, you know, it's easy to all be buddies when we're winning. But I think, you know, even when Italy's been on a good run for some time, but even when they weren't necessarily impressing, there was no sniping during pre-tournament. You know, there were no grumbles, and nobody's agent was coming forward and saying so-and-so needs more playing time. They really nailed that part of the game, and it's weird. It's weird as an Italy fan seeing a team play with so much energy, defend so far up the pitch, They've managed to keep it intact offensively as well. They're approaching 1,000 minutes without conceding a goal. And so right now, I think Mancini definitely has the balance right.
Gab, the star man today, no doubt about it. Locatelli, a word on his performance and the brace.
You know, it's funny, Manuel Locatelli, he was at Atalanta, probably Italy's best youth academy when he was young. Then he moved to AC Milan when he was 11. He was a superstar in the making, made his debut at 18. And then Milan said, oh, we better sell him to raise some money so that we can go and, you know, buy some other Muppet that an agent goes and sends our way. And they regret it because Locatelli went to Sassuolo and he's grown so confident. You know, Sevi, one thing that so many Italian ex-pros who've played abroad have said is the attitude towards young players. Young players at this level, traditionally from Italy, they don't try anything difficult because if you do try something difficult and you lose the ball, you know, you get that glare from the senior player. The fans boo you. They say, who do you think you are? Whereas in other countries, they encourage you to try difficult things. And I think because players like Locatelli, like Barella, like Jorginho himself at Verona, they came through the ranks at smaller clubs. I think these guys built up so much confidence in the way they play. And it's wonderful to see that with the national team. Verratti's another one, of course, who I think fits that mold.
Yeah, what about Ciro Immobile, a player who came under this tournament under this immense pressure, hadn't had the success at international level that he's obviously had at the club level. He gets another goal today. What's been the reaction in Italy to his strong start to the tournament?
I mean, look, I think there was a sense in Italy that even when Immobile is not scoring, you know, he gives you so many other things. He does work very, very hard. I think people had this idea of Immobile because he hasn't scored a lot with the national team. But at the same time, how can you overlook the fact that this is a guy who's averaged 25 Serie A goals over the past five seasons? You know, this is not a fluke. This is a guy who knows how to score. It's just that maybe his misses stand out more. I mean, we saw him before he got his third. We saw him miss two goals that you expect him to bury. I think you just have to take that. There's so much volume with Immobile in terms of shots, in terms of energy, in terms of activity, that yeah, he'll miss some, but you know, he's always there. And so he will score if you get him enough service. I think it's as simple as that.
So thanks to Immobile's last goal, obviously Italy win 3-0, but it could have been 4-0. Let's go back to the waved off goal from Chiellini in the 18th minute. This is one of those moments, and the rule shifts, you know, almost monthly now. But should this have been a goal, Don?
No, not under the current laws and not under the laws next season. They're trying to relax this law next season across the domestic.
Do you like
leagues.
The rule?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. You know, next season, if that falls to a teammate of Chiellini's and he scores, that will be allowed. It just seems, and I'm contradicting myself, it seems a little bit harsh from the era that we came because you know it's accidental. But at the same time, I am completely relaxed about that because he benefits from the handball, which surely feels wrong.
Stevie?
I think the rule is fantastic. You know, there are not many rules that you can make black and white that'll make everybody happy and will not stop an argument. Mm. This one is great. If the ball strikes anybody's hand in your team, that means you end up scoring a goal. Disallowed.
And it's good next season.
And then
season.
You can't argue with it. Yep. There's no debate
in
it.
It's good next season, because yeah. That hits Chiellini's hand and it falls to a teammate. He scores, that's allowed.
Right.
So it's getting relaxed, so it's good.
Casey?
Yeah, no, I think any time, like Steve said, black and white's nice because then all of us on the pitch, the fans, the owners, everybody can just say, this is what VAR showed. It's exactly right. Yeah. And there's no argument. Yeah. Yeah. And we can all just go back down and get on with the match. Yep.
It's been quite the run for the Italians, not just in this tournament, but leading into it. Came in today's match, 28 games unbeaten. Roberto Mancini has certainly turned this team around. And it's not just the results, right? It's the style of play, Gab. How much credit does Mancini deserve for what we're seeing from Italy?
I think he deserves a tremendous amount of credit, him and his coaching staff. You know, Mancini is not a guy who is wedded to a single philosophy. He's somebody who, you know, obviously was an incredibly talented player, and sometimes when incredibly talented players become coaches, they struggle a little bit because they're working with players who are less gifted than they were. And, you know, you saw him play a certain way based on the guys he had and based on what he was thinking was right at the time. This is different than what we saw from Mancini at, say, Man City, or even in his second run at Inter. He looks at modern football and he says, well, you know, the best teams, they press high, they play with a lot of energy, they take chances. This is how I want to play. This is how I want Italy to play. And I think the players will have more fun if they play that way. And took a little bit of convincing, I think, in some quarters. But I think he got buy-in very, very quickly.
Italy-Switzerland, then the second game of the day in Group A. First off, Turkey and Wales from Baku. 42nd minute. Wales with plenty of chances in the first half. Aaron Ramsey brings it down beautifully and makes it 1-0.
And they deserved this, Sebi, because this was probably Aaron Ramsey's third chance in the game, and he spurned a couple of easier ones, and he's took this one really well. Great ball from Gareth Bale, weighted really well. But it was nervy watching Wales because they should have been out of sight.
54th minute. Chance here, Barak Yilmaz. Oh, Stevie.
Well, we use this word composure, and he absolutely lacked it. I mean, he all of a sudden he realises, I've got an opportunity, he panics, swings wildly and puts it well over the crossbar.
All right, so on the hour mark, Gareth Bale driving into the penalty area. Pretty smart here, right? Leaves that leg dangling.
Yeah, but love seeing Gareth Bale run at defenders, right? And he wins the penalty, and unfortunately, he puts it 5 yards over the bar.
He overcomplicated that.
It was, and yeah, the double stutter.
You could see it.
Whatever.
You could see it.
But this kept Turkey in the match.
By the way, how about Çalhanoğlu's defending there, by the way?
Yeah, that was a big
I mean, it's horrendous.
Token.
Because that happened 20 seconds earlier from the other
side.
And Gareth Bale just twisted, went inside the 18-yard box, and they forced the second corner. But the defending, you see Soyuncu there, just in shot there, number four. He goes ballistic. So, fully deserved if you're Wales, but they had a little sweat on.
Yep.
You know, because they should have been out of sight very early on.
Conor Roberts and the second goal scorer for Wales. There you see the final match stats. Let's get some post-game perspective. Aaron Ramsey.
Gareth, fantastic performance and a superb result.
Yeah, no, first and foremost, yeah, a fantastic team performance. I think we knew it was a real good opportunity tonight to get a win. Obviously, still a very good Turkey team, but we all turned up, we all put in a great performance, and I felt like we thoroughly deserved the victory.
And a word on your own performance, the penalty and obvious disappointment, but you more than made up for it with the two assists.
Yeah, no, I felt I played well all evening. Obviously, the penalty miss is my fault, of course. I'll take responsibility, but I think that shows the character. I kept going, I kept fighting away and got the second assist to kill the game, which was great.
You went close a couple of times in the first half, but your persistence certainly paid off.
Yeah, third time lucky. I had a couple of opportunities. But, you know, there's nothing I could do about them. I have to keep making them runs, keep getting into positions, and thankfully one of them went in.
4 points from two games was the aim before tonight. That leaves you in a wonderful position ahead of the trip to Italy.
Yeah, that was the target, is to get out of the group. Now we're on 4 points. It's a decent tally after this couple of games. So now we can go to Italy full of confidence and, you know, who knows what can happen there. But our target is just to get out of the group.
Massive win then, obviously, for Wales. Gareth Bale, the story of the game for you?
Actually, quite a few stories. I thought Aaron Ramsey was brilliant. Best I've seen him play, either in a Juventus shirt or a Wales shirt for many a year. I thought Chris Meppham at the back was quite solid. He was brave when needed. I thought Ben Davies at left back played really well. But the standout performer for me, I think, was Aaron Ramsey. Mm. I think it was how many runs he was making from deep. He was a great outlet. And he kept on running. His energy levels were fantastic. He should have scored more than one. He should have scored two or three. But he kept on going. And as I said, he put in a real shift. Gareth Bale was excellent as well. So the big performers for Wales turned up.
Yeah. Bale involved in almost everything positive for Wales today, wasn't he, Stevie?
Yeah, well, listen, if you stand off him and let him play, then he'll pick you apart. He'll either run past you or he'll pass it past you. I mean, Aaron Ramsey, you know, we're talking about these runs in behind. And I'm not sure whether this was when they saw the Turkey team sheet and saw that Arkan was playing at centre-back and not Demiral, because a real centre-back would have, after it happened the first time, would have sorted it out. They didn't sort this out. They let Aaron Ramsey run in between the two centre-backs on four occasions, and he did score with one of them. But you've got to give him credit. He absolutely took advantage of it. And, of course, Gareth Bale with the balls, he kept seeing it.
Yeah. Don, why don't we see this Bale with Spurs?
I think Jose had him for a start, so he's quite withdrawn or didn't play too many minutes. I just think he feels relaxed, I think, in a Welsh shirt. I think he feels the pride. It's the same sort of argument with Paul Pogba and Man United. Some players just come alive, and I think he takes more responsibility. He's quite...
It's different than Pogba, though, right? No, yesterday on the show, we said Pogba's better with France because he's got better players. There's not better players at Wales than there are at Spurs.
No, that's true, but I think it depends on what your character's like. Mm. From what I hear, what he's like is a person. He's quite shy. He goes into a Spurs dressing room, and he's got to feel as though he's got to have a lot of love, which you find it really strange for the career that he's had and the amount of trophies that he's won. But I think when he probably goes back into the Welsh squad, he probably has a little bit more self-belief, a little bit more confidence. He can probably show that a little bit more. Where at Tottenham, as you said, he's got some world-class players around him.
Bale now in a position where, regardless of who he's playing for domestically, he's never going to get the praise, no matter what he does? Because if you look at the stats...
Has he earned any praise?
If you look at the stats, by the way, Gareth Bale in the Premier League this year has a better per-minute ratio for goals and assists than anybody else.
Yeah, that's because he doesn't play as much, Stevie. I mean, that's a statistic based off numbers.
Then something's happened. So he's in a position now where domestically, regardless of whether it's Tottenham, whether it's Real Madrid, no matter what he does, he ain't getting any praise. When he pulls on a Wales jersey, everybody loves him.
I think that's slightly harsh.
Listen, I'm not a huge stats guy, you know, but you can't argue with stats. If you've got the numbers, you argue with goals expected. 2 days ago, you argued with goals expected. Everybody sat here yesterday and said, Ronaldo, fantastic. Did nothing all game, scored 2 goals.
So are you saying Bale's played better for Spurs than he did today for Wales?
It's okay for Ronaldo to do nothing for 89 minutes and then score 2 goals, but it's not all right for Gareth Bale. That's kind of the way it feels.
I think part of the problem with Bale is everybody still expects to see Bale from 5-6 years ago. Just putting his head down, running past people, doing things. Now he has to drop off more, play more as a playmaker behind the scene.
But he was brilliant today.
Well, exactly.
The passing was great.
The wheels were good.
But Don,
that's what I said.
He didn't play like you saw him years earlier.
But then you can argue that Ronaldo. So
100%.
Ronaldo now.
Absolutely.
So you've got to credit these guys where...
Reinventing.
But Ronaldo's producing at club level.
But they're not the same athletes anymore, Sebi. So you've got to have the brains about you to go, right, have I got my blistering speed? Gareth Bale was like a racehorse, wasn't he? He could go box to box like you wouldn't believe it. Ridiculous numbers he was hitting in terms of goals, but more and more so what he was doing. Now he's reinventing himself by the ball that he played to Aaron Ramsey. He probably never played that in a Real Madrid
shirt. I think there's also a question.
Same as Ronaldo.
Is how much does he care? Because there's obviously some scenes at Real Madrid where it looked like he could really not care at all. Right. And sometimes that follows you.
Mm. But you know as well, when you come to the latter part of your career, he's already come out, Gareth Bale, a couple of months ago and said, I'm not going to tell everyone what's going to happen to my career because it'll cause a stir. So that's just left wide open. You don't know if he's going back to Real Madrid. There was rumours of him maybe this was going to be his last tournament and then maybe not playing again. He's got so much more to offer.
Sure.
What was it? Wales, golf, Madrid, penalties? It's probably the fourth one there.
Yeah.
Gab, I hear you're laughing at us in our Gareth Bale conversation here in studio. Why?
No. I mean, I agree with Casey. I mean, I think there's another big elephant in the room. And in addition to everything you guys said about him being older and the injuries and so on, I think a lot of football clubs don't feel that they can trust him. And they don't feel that they can trust him off the ball. I think certainly that was one of the reasons he had so little playing time with Mourinho at Spurs. I think that was one of the issues why he didn't play at Real Madrid. And with Wales, it's different because he's the best player and everybody else works for him. That and the other elephant in the room, which is obviously his wages, his unwillingness to go anywhere, to even contemplate some kind of pay cut in exchange for more years, that tells teams, that sends a message to teams that it is the way Casey described it. You know, how much does he actually care? And I think whether it's accurate or not, you know, this has been like a millstone around his neck. So he's a Madrid player, and if he shows up there, he's going to keep collecting paychecks until June 30th, 2022. That's not going to change.
Sorry, guys. You know, Sebi, as well, sometimes you get a point in your career where you just start enjoying your football because you know you haven't got too many years left. I think that's what we're seeing in Bale. He's loving life playing for Wales.
He was great today with one notable exception, right? The penalty miss. And it's crazy because he's a player that good and he misses it this bad, Stevie. How does that happen?
I'm going to say that I think he's looking to put this in the bottom corner and he sees the goalie going that way low and has to go high and just puts it too high.
Mm. What about the stutter steps? I mean, the multiple stutter steps.
I might be way off here, but it's almost like he was taking a free kick, the technique that he went for, because you see the sort of revolutions on the ball. Normally when you hit a sort of top spin, it would top spin, and you hit them sort of arcing free kicks from distance where they dip at the last second. It was almost like, to me, overcomplicated the penalty. Maybe he was going for the stanchion. Maybe he's seeing the goalkeeper go the right way at the very last second. But it looked like a free kick sort of penalty, free kick effort rather than a penalty. You see it there?
But I expect to see him step up and just smash it into the upper corner.
As a goalie, do you love it when they're stuttering?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely, 100%. Yeah. And then I can kind of maybe move a little bit because they're waiting for you to move. And if you do the, I'll come this side, but then I'm going, yeah, I like the stutter. But what I don't like is a guy stepping up full of confidence and going smash right in the corner, because it doesn't matter what I do. Yeah. It's a goal.
Accountability, obviously, very important on this show. Before the tournament, Gab, I think, very famously said that Turkey actually had better center backs than Italy. Gab, where were those great center backs today?
Yeah, today, one of them obviously was on the bench because he opted for he wasn't at center back. I don't think Soyuncu was a problem. I think Stevie said it right when they put Ion alongside him. Look, I just want to make this clear. I'm not dissing Bonucci and Chiellini for what they have. I am just a little bit concerned because of their age, because of their tendency to pick up injuries, especially in Chiellini's case. He came off again. And because of their ball playing relative to the other defenders that Italy have, like Acerbi and Bastoni and whatnot. But, you know, I will gladly take the L on that one for now. But, you know, I'm just keeping everything crossed between now and the end of the tournament.
But, Stevie, what's rule number one of center backs? No pressure in midfield, drop and try to keep it in front of you.
Yes.
Keep that high line and watch Gareth Bale just pick passes right over the top of you.
Absolutely. They were playing with blinkers on.
Yeah.
You can see 6 points from their first two games. So Italy, the first team to punch their ticket into the round of 16. 4 points for Wales from their first two games. Not officially assured a spot in the round of 16, but Don, I mean, couldn't have been a much better start to the tournament for the
Welsh.
Incredible.
I texted Robert Page and he's over the moon. After the first game, he was a little bit confused on the performance that they put in. He felt as though they were a little bit nervy, a little bit edgy. But you would have thought now 4 is going to be enough for them.
Mm. You think they're capable of another special run like we saw in 2016?
Listen, I'm not going to say no, because I said after the first game, is this actually the Wales that you know, is this what they are? The way they performed against Switzerland was awful. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to be positive about, apart from somehow they stole a point. Mm. Today, my goodness, if they play the way they did today, they've got a chance against anybody. So I am not going to diss Wales again.
He made the point.
You think Italy's going to let them play?
He
like
made
that?
The point, Robert Page. He said they're a great bunch of lads. He said they'll work incredibly hard for me. Mm-hmm.
Two games down then in Group A, one to go. Group A will finish up actually on Sunday. Both games going off at the same time. That's noon Eastern time. Italy against Wales in Rome. That match on ESPN2. Switzerland, Turkey from Baku. That match on ESPN.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Massive news from the club football world. Sergio Ramos will be leaving Real Madrid after what you see there, an endless slew of trophies and 16 years at one of the biggest clubs in world football. At the age of 35, he is getting ready for what will be the next step in his career. Perfect time then for us to welcome into the show Sid Lowe. Sid, what more can you tell us? It seems like this news has been kind of percolating for a while, but still, when you see the press release, when you see there's a press conference tomorrow in Madrid, it feels shocking. It feels like the end of an era.
Yeah, that's it. You said it in a nutshell. This isn't a surprise at all. We knew this was coming, but it's true that when you see it in an official statement, when you see it there in black and white, it does kind of hit you a little bit, because I think there was always that sense that, well, maybe at some point, two very proud men, Florentino Perez, the president, and Sergio Ramos, at some point someone will back down, someone will allow a way to find an agreement, and this just won't happen. But in the end, it has. It isn't a surprise. Their positions were very, very far apart all the way through these negotiations. The very fact that we got to the end of the season without a contract signed, bear in mind that, you know, Sergio Ramos, as of tomorrow, will have 13 days left on his contract. So, you know, no one gets that point if there's a determination from everyone for them to continue. So this isn't a surprise at all. But seeing it in black and white is pretty big. We don't know what his next step will be. We do know that he's absolutely determined to keep on playing. He's got no intention whatsoever of retiring, despite being at the age of 35, and let's see how it's handled tomorrow, because both Ramos and Perez will be there, and it will be quite interesting to see them try and play that role where they like each other really. And of course, we know that, truth be told, they don't very much.
Sid, I know you said we don't know where he's going next, but let's speculate anywhere. Where are some of the options? What are some of the possibilities for Ramos' next destination?
Well, look, I'm very uneasy about putting these ideas out there, because one of the things that's been really clear over the last, well, I was going to say last 2 or 3 months, but in fact, this has been going back 6 months, a year, maybe even a little bit longer, is so much of this has been played out in the media. So every time you see a new team name mentioned, the first thing you do, of course, is try and work out, okay, which side has filtered this and with which end? You know, how real is this? How much is this a means of pressure? How much is this an attempt to try and force things along one way or the other? But the club names that have come out so far have been Paris Saint-Germain, Manchester City, Sevilla. Let's see if any of those materialise. I must confess, I think it's strange, and Ramos isn't the only one. I think maybe this summer will be different to previous years, that really big name players are in a situation where they genuinely haven't got their future sorted out. Because, of course, the normal thing for a player this big would be to reach this point, because even if we don't know it publicly, everything is tied up. In this case, it genuinely isn't, at least not yet.
Great to have Sid Lowe available to us. Also available to us, Julian Laurent, who joins the show live now. Jules, you just heard Sid mention that one of the potential landing spots for Sergio Ramos, PSG. What do you think of the link?
Yeah, he's been linked quite a lot with PSG. I think every time he wanted to sign a new deal with Real Madrid, suddenly in the press, the name that PSG exactly. was coming back, almost to put pressure, like Sid just said, on Real Madrid and said, hey, if you don't give me a new deal, I'm going to go to Paris. They never really thought about it that much, to be fair. But maybe this time, because he's on a free transfer, there's no transfer fee to pay. But again, that's not a position where right now PSG are thinking about strengthening. They are happy, certainly, with Marquinhos and Kimpembe as the two starters. I very much doubt that if he keeps playing, Sergio Ramos would want to go somewhere where he's not going to play or not be the first choice or the first two choices at centre-back. That's why I still think it's very unlikely that he goes to Paris, but it's not impossible. Personally, I think, really, for the romantic that we all are, going back to Sevilla and finishing his career where he started all those years ago, 16 years ago now, since he left Sevilla to go to Real Madrid, I think it would be very beautiful.
Sid, central defense already kind of an obvious area of concern for Real Madrid. Where does this leave them heading into next season?
Well, look, let's start with the basics in terms of the numbers and the candidates to play in that position. Of course, they've already signed David Alaba, and so that changes things. And of course, that doesn't just change the way that they're set up for next season. It had an impact in these negotiations. All the way through these negotiations, as I've already said, in terms of the clubs that Ramos was linked to, also the whole situation with Alaba was kind of, all the way through, there was this sense from, at least from Sergio Ramos's camp, that maybe this is a means of pressure. That Real Madrid maybe are putting his name out there as a way of saying to you, you know, if you don't carry on, it doesn't matter. So that's one thing that's set up. I think the big question really, in terms of the centre-back positions now, is what happens to Rafa Varane? Because I think if you replace Ramos for Alaba, the rest of it is fine, particularly as we've seen the back end of the season that Eder Militao has played very well. There's a belief now that maybe he is that player that they spent a lot of money on. I think it was 40 million euros or maybe even 50 million euros that they spent on Militao. I must confess, I can't remember the exact fee now, but it was a lot of money. And so now they think, okay, this is okay. The question mark, I think, now is what does Rafa Varane want to do? He only has a year left on his contract. Last summer, he already intimated that he wanted to go. So Real Madrid need to make a decision on that. In terms of purely the roster who can play at centre-back, Ramos's position is already covered. Mm.
Sid, last question on this. What does Ramos wanting to leave Real Madrid tell us about the state of things at the club? Does he just not believe he can win there, you know, before his time is up?
No, I must confess, I don't think it's about that. I don't think it's about a sense that Real Madrid isn't going in the right direction. I think it's much more personal than that. I think it's much more about the contract that he wanted. I think it's much more about the relationship with the club. It's much more, I think, about... I don't want to reduce it to money, but money is a big part of it, about the stage of his career that he's at. Bear in mind that this is a 35-year-old footballer that fundamentally the point in which the club and the player didn't agree was on the length of the contract. Ramos wanted 2 years, Real Madrid wanted one, that it would essentially be a continuation of the salary he was already on, minus 10%, which is being applied across the board to the squad. In fact, in some players, it's even more than that is being applied. And so I think this was about a negotiation. And I must confess, it does make you wonder if at some point this has been a miscalculation by someone. This has been a miscalculation about how far the club would go or how far Ramos would go, how far either of them would move to meet in the middle. And in the end, essentially what happened was that you had a negotiation in which the two sides put their deals on the table and those two deals stayed there. Mm. And there was no really significant attempt to bring them together.
Sid, what do you think the reaction will be from the Real Madrid fans? Obviously an iconic figure in the club's history, Sergio Ramos.
I must confess, I don't really know in terms of the long-term reaction. I think the short-term reaction, of course, will be disappointment. I think the short-term reaction will be a sense of... the Spanish likes to use the phrase orphaned, a sense of kind of feeling orphaned a little bit in the short term, that idea that this guy who, you know, has been there for 16 years, who's the captain, who without doubt is the key leadership figure, and his departure is very significant in the short term, at least. I think at the same time, though, there will be some people who believe that he should have given a little bit in negotiations. I think there will be some people who accept the position of the club, not least because, as we've already said, he's 35 years old. We saw the way that his career at Real Madrid has ended, and that's another thing that I think we have to keep in mind here. In 2021, he's only played six times, four of those for Real Madrid, two of those for Spain. I believe I'm right in saying that none of those have been a full 90 minutes. He has played when he wasn't really fit. He played against Atalanta not fit. He played against Chelsea not fit. He hasn't been right at the back end of the season. He hasn't gone to the European Championships with the Spanish national team, which is a pretty sad way for it to end. But what that might do, of course, is reinforce the idea of some of those fans that were doubting whether it was right to let him go. That may at least enable them to accept a little bit more of this on the grounds that, well, okay, look, this is a 35-year-old player who, although we thought he was in fabulous physical condition, at least until Christmas, since then hasn't been. And I think that means that, how do I put this? In the cold light of day and stripping away all sentiment, I think the swap, Ramos for Alaba, I think there will be some fans who think, actually, this possibly isn't that bad a thing to do.
Mm. That's until he signs with Barcelona and wins the championship next year.
Yeah. Exactly.
All right. Thank you very much, Sid. Plenty more.
Or as Luis Suarez has shown, maybe he goes to Atletico Madrid.
There you go. Plenty more on Sergio Ramos' impending move from Real Madrid and where he might end up on the latest edition of the Gab and Jewel show, which, of course, you can download wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
All right, let's flash back to yesterday. Germany-France marquee matchup. Antonio Rudiger appearing to bite Paul Pogba and then I don't know what else we would call that. An embrace?
A tweak of some sort?
That's a weird one, isn't it? It is weird, is a good word. Pogba obviously seen here discussing it with the ref, but then after the game, everything seems to be, you know, good. There was kind of hugs and handshakes after the match. Here's what Pogba had to say. We're friends. This was nothing big. He nibbled, I think, a little bit on me. We have known each other for a long time. Here was the response from Antonio Rudiger. I should not come close with my mouth to his back, no doubt about it. It looks unfortunate. Paul and I have talked about it as friends after the final whistle. Don, I guess let's start with the Rudiger perspective. Like, what's he thinking? What a risk. In the age of VAR, it's reckless, isn't it?
I've got no idea. He might have just been messing around.
I mean, but you can't mess around like that on that stage.
I don't know. It's ridiculous. It's not like he sunk his teeth in and took the right chunk out of him. It's like he's playing. I mean, it's something I'd never, ever do, so I can't try and get in the mind of what Rudiger's thinking with his hands or his teeth. I mean, I've got no idea.
Should he have been sent off?
I'd probably say a yellow. I don't know.
It's either a red or nothing, right? I would assume if you think he bit him, he's got to be a red.
Well, he didn't. They suspended Luis Suarez for 4 months. Because if he would have truly bit him, like you said, you would have seen it. It was just weird.
Can we call it a love bite? Can we call it a love bite?
I mean, I don't know how you love, but I guess so.
I don't know. It's ridiculous.
Stevie,
is that how you defend?
You can't send them off.
You can't.
No, unless you know that he's bitten them, you can't send them off. And you can't yellow card them.
Yeah.
It's either, as you said, I think it's either a red or it's not.
But the VAR guy,
I personally think it's not. I think he's messing around.
The VAR guy, though.
Whether he's messing around or not doesn't change.
No,
really?
Of course it does. Okay.
The VAR guys are watching that.
Not to the guy who's getting bit.
But he didn't really get bit. Like you said, it was weird.
Look at this reaction. That's not a guy who got bit there.
Yeah, but then he grabs him, and it's almost like the grab was worse than the little whatever it was.
The amount of times that we play against each other. So Rudiger's been at Chelsea for how many years? Pogba, United for many years. They'll have been talking every single time they've played against each other. They'll be messing around. The way he's grabbing them, to me, is he's messing around. And that's what it is. I think they got this situation right. Unless you're 100% sure that you can turn around and say, he intentionally bit him, then you can't send him off.
But Rudiger's putting himself at risk.
It's a stupid thing to do.
Really silly.
Stupid.
Yeah.
We've got Julien Laurent still with us. Jules, what's been the reaction to this in France?
Been really interesting because, as you said, Paul Pogba was very quick to say, hey, this is nothing. You know, I didn't appeal for a yellow or red card. It was nothing with friends, as we saw the quotes. In France, the perspective was slightly different over the referee, and not just on this incident, but over the whole game. The French felt that with this ref, which, by the way, I'd never, ever before refereed in the Euros, was quite young and quite inexperienced. The French media felt that, and Deschamps to a certain extent as well, and some of the players felt that he was never really in control of the game. There was a few incidents, maybe a second yellow for Kimmich when he hit Lucas Hernandez in the face. There was obviously the big clash between Gosens and Pavard in the second half. There was maybe the penalty from Hummels on Mbappe. So there was a few things like this. And that, the bite, because it's a bite. I don't care what you're saying, a love bite or a nibble. he beat him 100%. And that just adds to the list. Again, the French not asking for anything and UEFA are not going to pursue this. And it's probably the right thing to do. But I think Rudiger, let's not forget the comments that he had the day before the game when he said, we're going to go dirty on them. We're going to play dirty. You can't be too nice with a team like this. We have to be aggressive and be dirty with them. And I think that's what they did. And Gosens did the same. That's what Rudiger did. It wasn't enough. But I think they have to be careful on what they said and what they did coming into the next few games, Germany.
You surprised there hasn't been a bigger reaction, Casey?
A little bit. I mean, and I think you got to give Pogba a lot of credit because I think if Pogba wanted it to be a bigger deal, it would be a bigger deal. And but again, when you're used to seeing a bite, you've seen some bites.
We've seen the master at work.
Is it a bite or a nibble? Was Paul Pogba saying a nibble?
Yeah. Well, I guess we should go with the victim then, right? If the victim says it was a nibble, he would know best. So, speaking of Paul Pogba, Jan Agafjordtoft. Our colleague here on ESPN FC tweeted this right after the Pogba match. Of course, we know Jan very plugged in with the brass at Manchester United. Reed Pogba playing for France. United wants Paul Pogba as he plays for France. What a player. Brilliant tonight. Jules, why is Pogba so much better with France than he is with Manchester United?
Well, I think, one, to start with, he's got better players around him, and that, this is no offense to the United squad, but I think it's true. I think the way France played is different to the way United play. In Didier Deschamps, he has more than a manager, more than a head coach. He's a second father to him. Paul Pogba lost his dad not long ago, and I really think that the relationship he has with Deschamps, and we saw it today after training. They spent 20 minutes on their own in the middle of the training pitch, which was the Bayern campus in Munich, talking. And you could see the strength in that relationship with, I don't think Paul Pogba has and had with anyone, not even at Juventus or at Manchester United before Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And I do think that he plays for France with a different confidence. He's a man on a mission, which is easier, of course, because it's by bunches of seven games in all those competitions, Euro 2016, World Cup 2018, Euro 2020, where I think you're in a different mindset than over a whole season where you play 60 games, for example. I remember a few people saying, oh, it's easier to be good over seven games in a World Cup than over 60 games on a whole season, which I understand. However, I still think that he could do better with United. Of course, everybody can always do better, but there's a very different mindset when he plays for France.
Stevie, is he trying harder with France than he does with Manchester United?
No, you can't say that. I think when he's playing for United, there seems to be a different sort of pressure on him. The Pogba that plays for France, I always think of Pogba playing for France as a guy going forward who's looking for passes, who's looking to try and get in the box maybe, whereas United, everybody jumps on the bandwagon of, well, he doesn't defend, he doesn't get back, he doesn't do this. It's all about what he doesn't do. And for France, it seems to be all the good things he does. And when he does do something wrong, that's fine, we'll accept it, because you know what? You give us so many good things. I think it's just a different pressure completely.
But Don, you said it yesterday. Why is he better for France?
Can't I?
Yeah.
And there's lots of different reasons. All of a sudden, you're Paul Pogba. For a start, he's playing in the best position. Doesn't always play that at Man United. Gets mixed up in different positions. He can play off the left at United. Plays as a sort of holding midfield player, trying to spread the play from deep. With France, he plays in his correct position. He has N'Golo Kante alongside him, who makes everyone better. He made Danny Drinkwater better. Makes Jorginho better at Chelsea. He's got a freer role where he can express himself, because that's what Paul Pogba wants to do. You wouldn't want to put any limits or any shackles on him. And then before you know it, you say, well, who's he got? What's his options when he passes it forward? Mbappe, Benzema. Great options. So when he pulls a blue shirt on, everything just fits him. I wouldn't say he tries any harder for United or France or any less. I just think when he pulls on that shirt, I think he feels comfortable. He's got a lot of pride. He obviously loves playing for his country. And you see the players that's wrapped around him. It's perfect for him.
I disagree a little bit.
You pointed out work ethic yesterday.
I think consistently he works harder for France. I don't think it's across the board, but
I'm not sure I see that.
I've seen some smaller, not when they're playing against the big teams, but some of the smaller teams in England where someone's kicking him or whatever, that he doesn't look like he cares as much.
Paul Pogba, no doubt one of the stars of the tournament so far. Cristiano Ronaldo as well. Of course, when you're Cristiano Ronaldo, you need help getting around. You also you need to have your credential. You don't know who. Is this guy doing a great job or a bad job, this security guard?
Poor job.
I would say he's treating everybody equally, Don.
It's Ronaldo, man. He's forgot his past.
He knows it's Ronaldo.
With a mask, you know, maybe couldn't tell.
It's stopping Michael Jackson going into his own concert.
Normally when somebody goes, when they're a superstar, they say, who are you? Usually you get your finger and you point it straight at your face.
Is that what you do? Do you know who I am?
At Anfield all the time.
Problem is, you got a mask over your face then.
Oh, come on, he knew it was Ronaldo, man.
Here's how Group F will wrap up. Hungary, France, Portugal, Germany. Not in a wrap up, actually the second game in the group phase in Group F.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Some more non-Euro news. The Premier League schedule is out. And how about these first seven fixtures from Manchester City? All right, so it starts away to Spurs, then against Norwich, Arsenal, Leicester City, Southampton, Chelsea, and then Liverpool. Again, that is the first seven matches of the season for Pep Guardiola and company. Sometimes we make a lot out of this, but, man, that's a tough start to the season.
That is tough. You know, that is a tough block of fixtures. When you're trying to look at a block of fixtures where you can get a really good start, they still might get off to a great start, obviously, but I don't think anyone's got us as tough as that.
Mm. I guess if there's a sense of relief from Manchester City fans, they didn't get off to a great start last season, Stevie, still run away with the league.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, there's one thing Pep won't be doing, looking at that and looking at 7, 8, 9, 10 fixtures. He's looking at one fixture, that's the first one of the season, and all he's interested in is preparing for it. And actually, sometimes when you have a so-called big test right at the start, if you come out on the right side, that sets you up for the rest, not just the next two or three games, but that sets you up for the rest of the season. So I don't think Pep's bothered about what he's facing. No,
they beat them last year, though, didn't they, Tottenham? They beat City 2-0, I think, off the top of my head.
Yep.
So he'll be analysing what went wrong in that game for sure.
It's not a big concern. I mean, you're going to play those teams anyway at some point. That rough start to the season.
I don't ever remember once looking at the fixture list and going, "Oh, the first seven games. Look at that." I remember we started with Arsenal away, the first game of the season, 88. Beat them 2-1. Set us up.
Yeah, but
if we win.
Right,
that was the only game we looked at.
Yeah, but if you're a manager and you're picking and choosing, you want a nice little start to ease into it, don't you?
Yeah,
if you could.
I think it's more important for teams that are fighting relegation that are fighting for the title. Because I think if you're fighting relegation, you want to come in the league and you want to pick up points. You don't want to go 3-4 games into the season and already put yourself in a hole.
But what if they've not picked up too many wins inside the first 5 or 6 games? City.
Can I tell you?
And they don't deserve to win the title.
Can I tell you the one thing as a player?
Yeah.
You know who you don't want the first game of the season? A team that's been promoted.
So Liverpool don't want Norwich?
Because it's, you talk about a cup final.
Right.
You talk about everything against you. And it's the first game of the season where maybe you're not quite ready.
So Liverpool have got
Norwich.
You know,
everybody talks about, well, it takes you 3 or 4 games to get in your stride and all this talk.
A couple of years ago at Norwich.
Liverpool have got Norwich. They'll be distraught.
You don't want a team that's come up. I'm telling you.
What? You'd rather have Norwich than Tottenham?
I never said that. I'm just telling you, as a player and as a coach, you don't want a team that's just come up.
Didn't Norwich beat Man City 2 years ago when they came up?
There you go, Steve. There you go.
What does that mean?
That means there's a lot of emotions when you first come up for that first Premier League game.
It's like an FA Cup final for them.
Yeah.
One team we didn't see on that first seven for Manchester City, Everton. They seem closer and closer, Don, to hiring Rafa Benitez. Your thoughts?
It doesn't feel like a good fit to me. Not for the personnel that Everton have got at the moment, not for the personnel that they're looking at. He's a very defensive-minded coach. Still lives on Merseyside, so that's the easy draw for him. It's the easy pick for him if he takes Everton. I'm not so sure this is going to end well.
Mm. Stevie, you agree?
I found this a little strange. Listen, there's no question that he's a good coach. But I wasn't a huge fan of the way Liverpool played under him. You know, the fact that he sat back when he's at home at Anfield against teams coming to Anfield, I just found that completely wrong. Because I was brought up with the complete opposite. And so it's a defensive style. It's certainly not the way the Everton owners and hierarchy have been talking about Everton. They're trying to revolutionise Everton. They're bringing all this money in. They're buying players who attack, Hamas being the obvious one straight off the bat. Do you think Hamas is going to get a free role under Rafa?
It's almost like a bit of a contradiction, because it's a sort of like sexy appointment because he's a big name, Rafa.
Right. But it doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit. Yeah. Newcastle's performances of the style of management weren't great. And the not sexy manager, I think, would have better suited Everton at the moment is someone like Graham Potter at Brighton. I think he's done an unbelievable job. He's improved every single player. But he, for some reason, won't get linked with the Everton job. I think that, to me, would have been a better fit than Rafa Benitez, maybe coming in for 18 months, probably not working, and then costing millions to try and move on.
I think it's also tricky when you've coached your rival, you've had some words, or at least the fans think you said some derogatory things about the club, and then you got to go in there, and how much time do you get to win them over?
Well, let me tell you, I had to do that. I was at Liverpool when I was young, then I went to Everton later on. So you've got to win them over. So Rafa Benitez now, having been Liverpool manager, is going to have to get off to an unbelievable start to get the Evertonians back on side.
How different is it from when he was at Chelsea?
In terms of?
I mean, winning the fans over.
Well, he didn't, did he?
Yeah.
He didn't. And they didn't accept him since day one, and he struggled, and he lasted, a season or just under a season or just over a season. So I don't think Evertonians are going to be too happy.
Gab, we still got you on here. What do you think? Rafa Benitez to Everton. Good idea or bad idea?
Yeah, I mean, he did win the Europa League at Chelsea, and he was always an interim appointment. But Don is perfectly right. They respected him, but they never loved him. He desperately wants to get back. I don't think it's a progressive appointment at all. He's very good at what he does. But equally, I don't know. Maybe I'm just a little too romantic. I just kind of feel that, and I love, but people say, it happens in Italy all the time. Fine, but that's not great either. I don't think you should go and coach your rival, not when you're so strongly identified with Liverpool, with winning the European Cup. And it's going to make life difficult for him, as I said. The whole agent Rafa was trending on Twitter. Remember back when he called Everton a small club? Stuff he said innocently. People are going to use that to hammer him, and I think it's going to be really, really tough.
Yeah, that's the funny one, Seb, especially off the back of Ancelotti. You can see why Marcel Brands and Farhad Moshiri and Bill Kenwright want the big name. You can see it, because if you went from an Ancelotti to, I'm suggesting, Graham Potter, and that's still the person I would have chosen if I was putting that name forward, going from Ancelotti to Graham Potter might not appease the Everton fans. So therefore, they've gone for the Rafa Benitez, thinking, well, we've gone Ancelotti and we've got Rafa Benitez. We're still serious. We're
still
going to have a
big name.
Yeah.
I think he's well-respected across Europe.
Well-respected, but is he a big name?
For Everton, yeah.
You think so?
I think so, yeah.
It's faded, but it's still just about.
Have a look at his CV.
Taking over Newcastle really bumped you up to that sort of level.
No, but his CV across Europe's pretty strong. I see it ending in tears.
More news today from around Europe. Gigi Buffon is going to sign with Parma at the age of 43, going back to where it began.
Why?
Going to be playing in the second division. Hold on, Stevie, hold on. Are you asking why? Let's ask Gab. Gab, why? Why is Buffon continuing to play now in the second division?
I think because he loves playing. He's one of those people who, you know, you kind of feel like you're going to have to carry him off the pitch. He's genuinely attached to Parma for obvious reasons. Their owner, Kyle Kraus, obviously they went down. He's putting money into the team. And he just wants to keep playing. And, you know, some people are saying, he just wants another gig so he can, you know, extend his record of appearances in Serie A. No, he'll go to Serie B and deal with it there. I'll tell you what, I genuinely think in his mind, when he went back to Juve from Paris Saint-Germain, he thought, maybe I'll be able to unseat Wojciech Szczesny. I love that about him. That's what makes him so good. He's so confident. I think he feels he can do a job. He's signed for almost no money. And let's see how he does. Maybe he won't be good enough in Serie B. Maybe he will.
I love it.
You do?
I love that.
Yeah.
43-year-old going into Serie B and still wanting to play and got the hunger to play, rather than just chasing a move where he might just sit on the bench and be a number two or a number three.
Or retire, hang it up.
Or retire. So go and play in Serie B, go and help Parma. Let's see what Sergio Ramos does.
No offense.
He's not going to go into...
How's the goalkeeping situation at Parma then?
I'm not sure.
He's going there to play.
You don't like it? You don't? Not even in like a romantic sense, going back to...
If he's going back to coach, going back to be a part of the staff.
You think he's done at 43, even can't help a Serie B team?
I'd be surprised.
Really?
Yeah, I'd be surprised.
Wow.
Great leadership, great that, but I don't know if he's going to come up with the save that they need.
Stevie?
On the field, he's not. Listen, he's going to be fantastic. The professionalism he has, the name he has, all the experience he has is going to be great for all the other players at the football club. But on the field of play, he's done. He's done. He can't
move. That's harsh. That's harsh.
Gab, what do you think? What do you think? What does he have left in terms of on the field?
Well, we saw him play last season, and he wasn't as good as Chesney, in my opinion. But he was good enough that Juve played him in a bunch of games. I think between the Serie A games and the Cup games, I would imagine he played 15, 20 games last season, close to it. So, you know, he was obviously good enough to do that. It's not like he was, you know, the third goalkeeper. It's not like he was Juve's Scott Carson or something, who never plays. He was good enough that they trust him with a number two. If Chesney goes and breaks his kneecap on February 1st, hey, Gigi, you're taking us the rest of the way. So they had enough faith in him there. They didn't need to. They could have brought in, a third keeper if they thought he was going to be rubbish. So to me, that says that, you know, Juve may have made some mistakes, but they rated him enough. And so, yeah, I don't see why he can't do a job in Serie B for another season. And he knows his body well, and when he can't do it anymore, he'll give up. Or they'll bench him. I don't think Parma would have a problem in benching him if he's not getting it done.
Plenty more on the transfer talk portion of our website. We track all the latest as the transfer window plays out this summer.
Hendry with the shot. Now the break might be on for Patrick Schick, and look what he's trying to do. Schick, oh!
Wow.
Can you believe what we've just seen? Out of this world from Patrick Schick. How many players would have the presence of mind in the heat of tournament battle to try that?
I think we've just seen goal of the tournament, Derek. We have just seen the goal of Euro 2020.
David Marshall being high up in his starting position, and that's something he made a note of. Is that somewhere that David is told to start from, or was he a little too high for that goal?
Well, if he'd been on his line, he would have caught it. if in a normal circumstance, he's looking to sweep up behind the defence when it comes out, it's a fantastic finish. I think rather than looking to apportion blame all the time, sometimes you've got to credit the goal scorer.
Couple days have passed. You still bitter?
What's happened there? Why are we showing that?
Yeah.
Ancient.
We had a couple Scots in the studio.
Being sarcastic, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Steve Clark.
Yeah.
Casey knows better than anyone. It's pointless us trying to argue with the next goalkeeper. I understood exactly what David Marshall was trying to do. That's what Steve Clark alluded to. He was going to be the sweeper. I would portion a little bit of blame to Jack Hendry for taking a shot on from 35 yards as a centre-back when he had the easy ball to his right-hand side. But the finish is just outrageous.
Mm. Stevie?
I'm sick of looking at that. I've seen this a thousand times.
The cackle from our producer in our ear says it all.
I'm taking a day off. If you're showing up,
it's about as bad as England winning the World Cup. We keep getting that. I guess it's going to be the same. Listen,
if you show
tomorrow,
Sebby, I'm taking a day off.
I'm with Don. Henry should never have tried the shot. But it's another mistake compounding the first mistake.
Yeah.
You know.
Have you seen the Spider-Man meme?
You can't make mistakes against quality players. What you did.
As a goalie, Casey, do you just shudder when you see that?
No,
do you put yourself in his shoes?
Because, I understand the pressure that kind of the new idea of the modern goalkeeper. He has to be 30 yards off his line in this scenario and back on his line on this scenario, and you can't be in both places at the same time. So I think you still, my job as a goalkeeper is to keep the ball at the back of the net, not be sweeping up 25 yards outside my box. And so for me, I would play the role more pessimistic and keep the ball out of the back of the net.
The ironic thing as well, when you analyse it and you go, is Patrick Schick going to beat anyone in a foot race over the top? Probably
not. Right. All right, that's all for this edition of ESPN FC. Gentlemen, as always, a pleasure working with you. However, our work here is not done. Taking viewer questions from Twitter, starting right now on Extra Time. Here we go. And Extra Time underway here on ESPN FC. I'm truly hoping that they've emailed me the questions because I don't have them here printed to me.
Hey,
no, producer, they weren't printed. Remember that time you asked me if they were printed during the show and I frantically said no? Yeah, that was good chat. Good chat, though. Okay, first one is for Stevie, I'm told. I'm going to read it right off the screen here, prove how well organized we are here on Extra Time. Stevie, if Sergio Ramos signs for Liverpool, would you appreciate him more? Oh, you guys should have seen Stevie while we were having that segment.
He doesn't sign for Liverpool.
Look, yeah. I want him to sign for Barcelona so bad.
Yeah.
How far past his best is he? Like, would he still help a big club, you think? Like a PSG, some of those places he's rumored to potentially move to?
Listen, the thing is, number one, he's going to cost you a lot of money.
Yep.
But the same thing is, when your legs are gone, it affects everything you do. It doesn't just affect you in a foot race. It affects your whole mindset. You know, you're scared the pace, number one. So you step back. Now, if you step back, you're going to affect the other three beside you, your two fullbacks and your other centre-back. And if you try and be clever and step up, and then try and give it the old, or the goalkeeper will cover me at the back. And then the other three, as I said, they either take a step back or stay where they are. So it's just, you can't play without decent legs at the highest level.
He's basically had a year off.
Wherever he's going to go, he has to be ready to accept that it's not going to be at the highest level.
It's a lot like he's got no ego, has he? So, good luck with that.
You know, they talk about PSG. You talk about tossing a coin. Is it going to completely blow the dressing room up? Or is his experience going to help it? You just don't know which way it would go.
Really? You don't think it would help? A leadership personality like that?
You've got Neymar, who thinks he runs the show, right?
I mean, are we putting Ramos and Neymar in the same category?
Another alpha male comes in and says, hey, no, we're doing this. So then he gets all his mates, Neymar.
Maybe that's what PSG needs.
And then Ramos gets all his mates and they go over there. That's really good.
He's suited to PSG more so than any team in the Premier League, I think.
Really?
I think so.
You agree?
Yeah, I don't think he can handle the physicality right now. At least not what we've seen from last season. And look, unless it's one of those situations where he truly was struggling with something and he gets the time to fix it and then his fitness builds before a season, but on last season, it would be really hard to trust his physical ability going into a new season.
Go to Parma and go and play with Buffon.
There you go.
Him and Buffon.
Legends.
Before he got injured, he wasn't particularly great the first half of the season.
Fair enough. Where does Gareth Bale rank among the most disrespected footballers in Europe? When he underperforms, everyone's quick to step on his neck. But when he performs, he doesn't get the recognition he deserves. Is Gareth Bale disrespected?
I think so. I mean, obviously there was something went wrong at Real Madrid, obviously. And he's not the ultra dynamic player that you were talking about, Don, who was box to box, beating players. But you saw today, being able to reinvent himself a little bit, dropping off into midfield.
He's not helped himself, though, is he? He's not helped himself.
No, he's not
when
helped
he puts
himself.
On Instagram.
Correct.
What was it? Wales, golf, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't help yourself, do you?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean.
But I think Leslie's got a point.
Yep.
There's also the last season at Spurs. I mean, he wasn't great.
Well, he never played for 7 months.
But Steve talked about the goals he scored for the minutes he played. He significantly contributed. The problem is, are you significantly contributing on that salary to the level that justifies that salary? And that's always weighed.
Jules, we didn't have you weigh in on Gareth Bale during the show. What do you think? Disrespected the right word to describe him?
Well, I think, no, I don't think he's right. I don't think he's disrespected. I think it was easy when he was at Real Madrid at times to make him the scapegoat because he was never talking in the media. He didn't like that. It was easy because he was a foreigner to start with. And because of his attitude, sometimes that nonchalance, I think, made him a disservice, if you see what I mean. But I do think that he almost put that upon himself as well. And he can blame himself for that. But I've always thought people were quite harsh on him, to be fair. Now it's different because he's much older. There's the contract, there's all that money, there's the things he's done lately, all the injuries as well, which hasn't helped the relationship with Zidane that broke very early on in both spells, really, of Zidane at the club. So I think it's a bit different. But I thought for a long time he was made a scapegoat where really he didn't deserve to be.
Jules mentions the word, yeah.
If I said nonchalance, does it sound the same as when Jules
no.
says it?
Oh,
no. No. I was actually, that was
nonchalance.
The...
Nonchalance.
I think it does.
No.
No.
Go for it.
Yeah.
Go for it, Stevie. Give me
nonchalance.
Sounds so French.
No, nonchalance.
No. Speaking of nonchalance and Gareth Bale, Stevie, is it sometimes normal for geniuses like Bale to simply not care? Today showed clearly they still got it. But will he be motivated again to do it at the club level?
I'm not going to go with the thing he doesn't care. Not caring.
Not care as much?
Not caring and just maybe not having the right attitude some days is two different things in my mind.
How different is it, really?
Well, some days you're just not at your best. And so when you're expected to be the genius every time you stick a foot on a field and you're not, then I guess it's easier for people to have a go at him. Yeah. I wouldn't say he doesn't care.
Do you know, sometimes, Sebi, as well, when you get older, I think the lads will probably back me up on this, is when you're young and you go to pre-season, you can't wait the Euros to finish when it's finished and come back and then start pre-season camp and then look forward to Premier Leagues or Serie A's or Bundesliga, Ligue 1, wherever you play. When you start hitting a certain age, you start thinking, oh, I've not got the hunger in my stomach.
Can I be a cynic here too? What about money? How does that play in? I mean, this is a guy who clearly doesn't need the money anymore.
It will not play a part.
No?
I mean, there was a rumour 18 months ago that the China deal was very close. He's got 1 year left at Real Madrid on an awful lot of money. I don't know what he's going to do, whether Ancelotti might be the right manager for him for his final year there. But when you've got enough money, that again plays into the hunger part of it.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Yeah, where everything's just a little bit hard work.
And who's got more money than Bale? I mean, his contract.
Well, but Don, you make a good point because
Stevie,
I think as I got a little bit older, and then forward to this summer, U.S. has a Gold Cup. I'd be like, well, do I play 4 or 5 games in the Gold Cup, or do I go back to preseason and do 3-a-days in a Norwegian forest?
Yeah.
I'll play a couple games in the Gold Cup, come back, play a couple preseason games before the season starts. And
all of a sudden, it's hard work.
And go all of it, yeah. But then because you played all summer, more or less, with the national team, you don't need that 6 weeks on the beach to then get yourself back going. So,
Jules, should PSG be winning the Champions League next season if they keep Mbappe, sign Hakimi, Wijnaldum, and Sergio Ramos?
Well, that's a lot of if to start with, and I don't like the ifs in football. And then, yeah, of course they can. They can, even if they don't sign all those players. I mean, Wijnaldum is already done. I think Hakimi is a far more likely possibility than Sergio Ramos, as we explained on the show. And yeah, they will be among the contenders. I mean, they've done final, semi-final, back-to-back, which is very, very good and bring a lot of confidence and momentum going into next season. So, of course, I think they will be a contenders and, of course, they will be capable of winning it. Even if Hakimi doesn't come and even if or someone else comes instead or no Ramos, but someone else has come, what they need, though, certainly strengthening that squad, and I think they will do that. And we saw that with Wijnaldum, we're seeing that with Donnarumma, although this is a more strange case for me, but still, I think they will strengthen and then they should be in a good position, in a strong position.
Most important thing, names on there, keeping Mbappe. Mm. That's the most important signing.
Great analysis.
You don't think Ronaldo's coming? Ronaldo and Neymar trying to play together?
Get them all in. sarcastic there, Sebby.
No, not at all.
Hey.
Would you rather see a random draw after the Euros group stage concludes, like we have with the Champions League, to avoid debate and speculation, such as with England at the last World Cup, of throwing away the final game to avoid playing a tougher opponent
in
the knockout rounds? You like it, don't
you? Like a random draw.
Yep, I kind of like it.
So once you get through the group stage,
yep,
all the balls, random draw. I like it.
Little Champions League. What do you think?
Third place finishers playing two third place finishers.
I guess that's the problematic part of it, right? You'd have to figure out a way to have only balls from this bucket and here and that.
And make sure they're not hot. Not any hot balls.
The frozen ones. What do you think?
Magnetic balls.
No?
I'm kind of stuck in the middle. I like the thought of that. Sitting, waiting and figuring out.
Like an FA Cup draw.
Like an FA Cup draw.
Excitement, isn't it? Yeah. Rather than trying to plot your way through.
But how do you do that with a group phase, I guess, is kind of the point, right?
Didn't
you got to reward teams that win.
Didn't England have the same scenario when they played Belgium in the World Cup?
Well, that's exactly what they did. And they not chose, but not winning that game put them in the better side of the bracket.
Exactly.
They got, you know, Colombia without James, Sweden eventually, and of course they get to the semifinal.
Exactly that.
Seb, you know what was...
Right, but this would fix that, right?
That's what I'm saying.
You know what was a great example of that? 2002 World Cup for the U.S.
Oh,
match. Instead, we would have played Italy, but we got to play Mexico. And much more comfortable beating Mexico than
Mexico
beating
won
Italy.
Their group, unfortunately, and then had to play the U.S.
I like that.
I quite like that. Random FA Cup style draw.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the memory, Casey. Appreciate that one. Don and Stevie, how would you inspire the Scottish team to go into Wembley and win?
Easy.
You've gone into Wembley and won, so you just say, do what we did, right?
Do what we did. Play for pride.
Yeah.
Know when you go to Wembley, they'll bottle it, England, if they go behind. That's exactly what happened.
Really? You get that early goal and it's
exactly
curtains.
What Craig Brown told us, because the game at Hampden was a tight affair, a 0-0 game all day long. And the analysis we've done on England, we had, you know, where the English players were going from, wide free kicks on the right side, left side, corners, left side, corners, right side. Paul Scholes never made his way into the 18-yard box. He did twice at Hampden, scored two headers, never scored two headers in his life. So we felt as though, in our psyche, it was a tight game. And we went to Wembley thinking, score the first goal, we can beat them.
Right.
And we beat them, and then David Seaman pulled off a save in the last seconds from Christian Daly. If that goes 2-0, England were gone. Forget about it.
Who scored for Scotland that day?
Don't know. Handsome chap.
Do you think Clarkey's...
6'1"? Oh, no.
Don, do you think Clarkey's taken a clip
definitely
of the head tennis and the diving header from yesterday to motivate the boys?
I'm expecting
to beat England.
I'm expecting the phone to ring. Me and Burley are back in the squad.
Yeah.
What do you
Safe
think?
Bet.
Stevie, have you seen this? This is from yesterday's extra time.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I bet the boys couldn't get to 20 or to 10.
Tell you what. You know the thing that really surprised me?
Is that they could get up
some
afterwards.
Some idiot thought that they couldn't do 10 headers.
Yeah.
What
made you think they can?
They only had... this is
professional footballers.
There's limited space here.
What do you mean limited space? I need a set of ladders to
touch in. You want to do another bet, Stevie? You and Don?
No header in a ball.
Here we go.
Seriously.
Pure excuses. I should have gotten more clear. I had to set it low. I could have said 100.
Did you hear Burnley? Did you hear Burnley when you said 10? He was like, he couldn't
hear. Where's the money?
Speaking of, I do pay my bets. I brought two 20s.
Yes,
Chris.
Heavy.
Look at that.
I like this.
Nice. Look at that. So the people know. Show them it's real. Not Monopoly money.
I love this program.
Yeah.
Make money.
There you go.
Talking football and make money.
There you go.
Genius.
That's more than you got paid for coming here today.
I like to take care of the analysts here. Jules, given the fact that Memphis Depay is all but certain to be a Barcelona player at the end of the Euros, combined with the possible return of Ansu Fati from injury, what will be your ideal front three for Barcelona next season?
That's a really tough one, because if you look at Memphis Depay's favorite position, it's the same one as Antoine Griezmann, which is the same one as Leo Messi as well. So I don't know how those three will play together, plus Ansu Fati, plus Ousmane Dembele, who at times was very good last season, whether he played up front or wide. So good luck to Ronald Koeman to find the best formula. And it's not just the best formula, it's who will complement each other well and who will be best suited to play with who. I mean, Messi, we know, is a starter, but amongst the other ones, then they will have to find a way of finding the other two. I guess they will play potentially with three up front to find the other two that will suit Messi and that team the best, and I think it will be tricky. I'm not too convinced about the Depay signing, I have to be honest. In terms of what he brings to the team and his profile, I think they could have gone for a forward with a different profile than Memphis.
I'd love to know who's in charge of the strategy at Barcelona.
Like, they got all those players, they got Agüero. Do they need Depay?
Even the year before, so they get rid of Suarez to Atletico Madrid because he was 33.
Yeah.
Fast forward 12 months, they sign Agüero.
Right.
I think he's 33. Yeah. Doesn't make sense. Then you go and bring Memphis Depay in, who's a talented player. But like Jules said, you got, forgive me if I miss anyone, but you've got Agüero, you've got Messi, you've got Dembele, you've got Coutinho, you've got Griezmann, you've got Fati, you've got Trincao, Pedri, who plays a little bit deeper. Where on earth does he fit in?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Is he a starter for them, Stevie?
No.
No?
So you buy somebody who's not going to start, so...
You mean better, better off...
Yeah, listen, you buy Agüero. You're buying Agüero to play him, right?
I would assume with what, yes, he's a free transfer, but you're going to have to pay him a lot of money.
So your front three could be Agüero, Griezmann and Messi. So you buy Depay to sit on the bench, do you?
Are you saying you're so much better off putting all your money...
A Dutch manager's buying a Dutch player and not going to play him?
Well, you'd be better off putting all your money into Wijnaldum. PSG have got an unbelievable player.
Yeah. Jules, is Agüero sure to start?
I don't think so. First of all, it's a bit like Sergio Ramos. We will have to wait and see his fitness because I don't know what kind of Sergio Agüero will turn up for next season. If it's the one at City who could not train 2 days in a row, could hardly play more than half an hour at times, he was a bit better towards the end of the season. But certainly the first 8 months of the season, he really struggled. And he's getting older, as we say, of course. And even if La Liga's style of football is much more suited to him, of course, I don't know what kind of fitness he would be in. So that will, I think, have a big impact on how much he plays. But you would think that if they signed him, considering how close he is to Leo Messi as well, and, you know, even more than close, is to play them together. So I guess he will play it. I don't know where Griezmann fits. I don't know where Memphis Depay fits, like we've just said. I'm not even sure where Fati and Dembele fit, unless you play a 4-4-2 with two wide players in Ansu Fati and Dembele, and then Messi and Agüero up front.
Mohamed asks, heard Son is about to sign a contract extension with Spurs. Why is nobody trying to sign him? He is a proven goal scorer and provides assists as well. Maybe Real Madrid can sign him. He is way better than Vinicius. Heung-min Son, should he be looking for a move away from Spurs? We talk about Harry Kane, ready to move away. Why not Son?
The question mark is always at Tottenham. Does Daniel Levy make a decision to pay somebody? He obviously made that decision to pay Harry Kane. But the rest of the players are usually a little bit lower on the pay scale than the rest of the Champions League clubs. And if they're afraid that Harry Kane's going to leave, they don't want Son to leave as well. Mm. So they'll do everything they can to keep him, to keep the fans happy. But if I'm him and I want to win something, unfortunately, he might have to leave.
Rumours in England this morning are saying maybe Bernardo Silva's leaving Man City. Got Atletico Madrid. If I was Pep, I'd be knocking on Son's door every day of the week.
Think he needs to leave Spurs, Stevie?
He wants to win something. Yeah. 100%. Mm. 100%.
Our final question comes from Frank LeBuff, spelled L-E-B-U-F-F. Of course, everyone remembers Frank's very famous Instagram post. Showed off his physique. Has anyone pumped up the ball on the desk to allow for more headers between crew members? No, but it appears to be taped to the desk now. I think that's a message for us not to play with
golf
the ball.
Golf magazine's still there, see, though. Craig was fuming over that yesterday.
I think he wanted to steal it and get some pointers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was more burly bluster, I think, than anything else. He might have brought it in here himself. All right, that's all for us. Yeah, boys?
Amazing.
Good day of work. $20 richer, all for what, 22 headers? Yeah, that was foolish, having hindsight.
Yes.
Next time we'll get them. Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Time, live start here on ESPN+, ESPN FC, all over tomorrow's European Championship action.